All right, we're starting here on the bottom of Gimel Amud Bet, six lines up. The Gemara says, Taima dichtev rachmana aleha. In yesterday's daf, we discussed the fact that Yivama yivu aleha, as well as the pasuk by Achot Isha, which is Isha el achota lo tikach l'ktsor legalot ervata aleha. So the word aleha, aleha, from that gezeira shava, we learned that in the face of a rayot, Yibum is suspended. Even though Yibum overrides Eshed Ach, which is one of the Arayot, that's the only one of the Arayot that overrides. Any of the other Arayot suspend Yibum, and Yibum's not allowed. We also learn from there, Litzror, that Tzarat Erva is Ptura. And again, we learn that Tzarat Tzarata is also Ptura. There'll be a Machloket coming up in the Gemara between Rav Ashi and Rav Yehuda as to whether that's a logical argument or is that something we learn out of the Pasuk? Right now, the Braita we have here has the Girsa in it, that they learned that out of Litzror instead of Letzur. The Gra takes that Girsa out because of the problem, the fact that it's a Machloket coming up. That's all that we discussed yesterday. The Gemara now says, with the absence of the Gzeirah Shava of Aleha, what would you have thought? If you didn't have this Gzeirah Shava, the assumption would have been that it would have overridden the Arayot. And that's what the Gemara said here. Taimo dichtiv rachman aleha. Only because you had that gzera shava of yevama yevo aleha and ervata aleha from isha lachota. Halav hochi. Without that gzera shava, hava amina, I would have thought, achot isha miyabemet. That even though there is an isur of arayot, sister-in-law, wife's sister, and you're faced with yibum, that you would override. Two brothers married to two sisters. One of the brothers passes away without any children. Then that sister would now fall to the second brother. And they would perform Yibum because there's no suspension of Yibum in the face of Arayot. My taima. Why would you have ever had a thought like that? De amrinan, aste, ase, vidachi lotase. Pretty simple, straightforward. The principle that we know that a positive commandment overrides a negative commandment. Here you have a positive commandment of Yivama Yavo Aleha, the performance of Yibum. You have a negative commandment, which is you may not engage in Arayot, which is Achot Isha. The Asay comes and eliminates the Lot Asay. Where it says, wait a minute. Imar Damrinan Ate Asay Vidochi Lot Asay. When we say that a positive commandment can override a negative commandment, that's only by Lot Asay Greda. That is a simple lotase, a simple negative precept. But lotase sheishvo karet midochi. Since when would you say that the assay can override a negative precept that also includes the punishment of karet? The karet is an indication that this is no simple lotase negative precept. This is a extremely serious negative precept. Gemara's assumption is that an assay can take over or knock out a regular lotase. We'll see evidence of that in a second as to the source for asei doka lotase, but it doesn't believe that this asei can overcome the problem of karet. Meaning that even if it's a negative precept, there's still karet here. Karet we cannot override. We've spoken about this in the past with regards to the fact that asei is also not doche, an asei and a lotase. So in that case, what is the reason that it's not overriding it? So there are two, Tosafot phrases it in two different ways. Some places, Tosafot phrases it is that the ase is doche de lot ase, but you still have the problem of the ase that's residual from the negative precept or associated with the negative precept. In other places, he says something similar to here, which is that the ase strengthens the lot ase and says that the lot ase is too strong now for the ase to overcome it. And that's what we have here. The lot ase with karet is just too strong to be overcome, and therefore you have a problem, which is the assay wouldn't have been doche lot assay. If that's the case, then what's the necessity for the gzeirah shava? The gzeirah shava is going to tell me, don't do yibum in the face of arayot. Who would have thought to do yibum in the face of arayot? There's no reason to say that. You have a lot assay of karet, nothing overrides that. V'tu, lot assay greda minolon de dochi. Secondarily, how do you even know that an assay is doche a lot assay? So the Gemara said, took it for granted before that that was the case. Now the Gemara says, okay, wait a minute. Let's take a step back and let's understand, how do you know that an assay is doche lot assay dichtiv? The source for the idea of assay doche lot assay, at least the Gemara here is suggesting, comes from Perchav Bet and Dvarim, Pasuk Yud Aleph, which is, Lotil Bash Shadnez, Tzemru Pishtin Yachtav. one may not wear a beged of kilayim, a mixture of wool and linen. Then the subsequent pasuk says, gedilim taselach al arba kanfot kusutcha asher techaseba. Make tzitzit. Put tzitzit onto the corners of your clothing. From that, the Gemara says, v'amar Rabbi Elazar, smuchim min haTorah minayin. How do we know that the juxtaposition of these two psukim has significance? Shneamar, he quotes a pasuk from Tehillim, smuchim le'adolam asuim be'emet v'yashar. So that smuchim are there forever, are made forever in truth and directness or straightforwardness. It's obviously a play on the pasuk here that smuchim le'adolam, that smuchim have significance. Over there, it doesn't mean two psukim next to each other, but he is using that in out of context and saying that smuchim means that there is value or there is validity to being goresh smuchim. The Tosafot mentions that what is the difference between smuchim and a hekesh? Sometimes the Gemara says it's a hekesh, which also talks about juxtaposition. So hekesh, the Tosafot says, is in a single pasuk. It's two items or a mention of two issues within a single pasuk. That's called hekesh. Smuchin is when you have two separate psukim that are adjacent to each other, and you have a limud. So that's why the Gemara here calls it smuchim, because you're talking about one pasuk that talks about kilayim, and the subsequent pasuk that talks about tzitzit. So that's called smuchim. So from that smuchim, the Gemara now is doresh. How do I know that you're allowed to wear tzitzit even when it means kilayim? It has shatnez in it. That's from this smuchim. Here you're dealing with an asay of mitzvah tzitzit, and a lota say of kilayim. And the say overrides the lota say. V'amar Rav Sheshet, Amar Rav Elazar, Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Minayin liyavama shenafla lifnei mukat shchin. How do I know that if a yavama ends up, her husband passes away, and her brother-in-law, who is now going to marry her, is someone who's a mukat shchin? He has some sort of disease, blisters, boils, something about him that is untenable for her in a marriage, she'ein chusmin uta, that we do not muzzle her. The only reason that Gemara here is using the word chusmin is because they're going to learn it out of the pasuk. It's not that the Gemara is somehow speaks about a woman being muzzled, but it's rather it's the play on the words because the Gemara is going to quote a pasuk that involves the word chusmin, which is she'ne'amar, lo tachsom shor b'disho, one may not muzzle an ox while it is working, while it is dash, trampling, stomping on the grains in order to separate the chaff from the kernels. V'samichle, and the pasuk afterwards is, ki yishvu achim yachdav, which is the parsha of Yibum. So you have a juxtaposition here between the restriction against muzzling a shor and the parsha of Yibum. So the Gemara says, well, how do I know that we don't muzzle the woman, meaning to play in the word lo tachsom, into being a yibum? That's from the smichuta parshiot over here. Tosafot asks the obvious question, which is, in each of these two cases, we did something different. By the case of tzitzit, we said, you have kilayim and tzitzit adjacent to each other. Therefore, tzitzit is overridden by kilayim, or basically, you can wear kilayim in tzitzit. Then we come to yivama and lo tachsom b'dishor, and we say, don't perform Yibum, but rather, she has the option to get out of Yibum by lo tachsom b'shor b'disho. You could do just the opposite. You could say that the juxtaposition of kilayim to tzitzit tells you, don't wear tzitzit when there is kilayim. And you could say that by the Yivama, that when she's faced with an untenable marriage, still it goes through with it because it says lo tachsom b'shor b'disho right next to Yibum. So you should have done it despite the fact that it causes her to be, quote-unquote, muzzled. So the Tosafot says you wouldn't have thought in that direction because you have to look at what the default would have been. What would have been the default had I not had the juxtaposition of the psukim? The default by tzitzit would be, don't wear tzitzit of kilayim. There's no reason to believe that you can wear tzitzit of kilayim. The juxtaposition of psukim now tells me something new. What must be new is that now I may wear tzitzit that have kilayim in them. The same is true by yivama. What would have been the default by yivama? The yivama is yivama yivala is afilu be'al korcha. Yibum happens even against her will. She has no choice in the matter. It's done without the acquiescence of the woman, the yibum is performed. So the default would have been to do it against her will. The juxtaposition now must teach me something new. What's that something new? That she has the ability to object. She has the ability to object where it's an untenable marriage. She doesn't have the ability to object all the time. It's in a case where it's something that normal people would not be sovel, normal people would not undertake or be willing to be engaged. The Mishnayot and Ketubot have a list of individuals where it's assumed that even if a woman actually agrees to marry this person, if after a while she says, I can't handle it, she's allowed to divorce, because these are just situations or individuals where it's so difficult to be in a marriage, and it's well acknowledged that that's the case. Also, Tosafot asks a very interesting question here. He says, Rav Yaakov Meorleans asked, from this smichud aparshio between tzitzit and kilayim, we should obligate women in tzitzit. We have a similar hekesh, not a smuchin, but a hekesh by chametz and matzah, where matzah and chametz are found in the same pasuk. Matzah is a mitzvah aseh as man grama that women would otherwise be pturot from. Chametz is a mitzvah lota aseh, which women are chayavotin. And the Gemara learns, mishe be'bal tochal chametz, someone who's obligated in not eating chametz is also obligated in kum machu matzah, in eating of matzah. And that hekesh drives the fact that women are chayavot in matzah. Now, why can't you say the same thing over here? You have tzitzit and shatnez that are adjacent to each other, juxtaposed. Well, a woman is definitely chayavet in kilayim, and she is turah mitzitzit because it's a mitzvah aseh she'as man grama. Why don't we say the same thing here? That if she's chayavet in kilayim, then certainly she should be chayavet in the mitzvah of tzitzit. Tosafot does an interesting thing here, and he says, well, how do we know that nashim are pturot from a mitzvah aseh she'as man grama? He says that is learned out of a hekesh, the hukush kol haTorah letefillin. We learn that out of the mitzvah of tefillin that comes out in Gemara and Kiddushin. Not going to go into the limud right now, but we learn out of tefillin, and then there's a hekesh between limud haTorah and or Torah and tefillin, which tells us that it plays the whole Torah. And Tosafot says over here, the hekesh trumps smuchin. This is where Tosafot describes the fact that smuchin is adjacent psukim, hekesh is something within the same pasuk. So hekesh is stronger than smichud aparshio. Based on that, he says that the hekesh trumps over here to say that mitzvah aseh she'man grama is turah versus the smuchin that we are being doresh in this case. Now, he says then, according to the one who says that tefillin is not a mitzvah aseh she'man grama, then women should be chayavot in tzitzit. That's why he leaves off based on the smuchin, because then you don't have a mitigating factor that's over here. But then he goes back and says, okay, why don't we say the other way around? If you're going to say that women are turot mitzitzit, tzitzit, why don't you say then they are pturot mi kilayim because of the juxtaposition of psukim? He says, v'shema ikka shum riboy l'inyan kilayim. He doesn't have a strong answer for that. And he says, maybe there's some other riboy that says kilayim applies despite the fact that it has a connection to tzitzit. So it's interesting. Tosafot is trying to grapple with the ramifications of connecting kilayim and tzitzit, that maybe they're broader than we're thinking. Not just that tzitzit can be kilayim, but now they might have other unintended consequences from the fact that you have the smuchim over here, because now you have other factors that play in for women and other issues. So now, Amvamar Rav Yosef, afilu mandul d'dorish smuchim ba'alma, even to go into the one who says that there's no significance to the juxtaposition of psukim, b'mishne Torah dorish. In Sefer Dvarim, he is doresh. So even if you don't believe that there's smuchim, meaning that we're going to see now it's machloket tanaim, nevertheless, when you get to Mishne Torah, everybody agrees there is smuchim. Daha, Rabbi Yehuda ba'alma lo dorish. Rabbi Yehuda in general is not doresh smuchim. U'mishne Torah dorish. Yet in Sefer Dvarim, he is doresh the inyan of smuchim. It could be, most of the smuchim that we just saw are out of Parshat Ki Teitze. And Ki Teitze is a collection of mitzvot, many of which have nothing to do with each other. It's like spot, 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 and you have just mitzvah after mitzvah after mitzvah. The question is, maybe that is why it's so significant. I mean, that the smuchim comes out of the fact is, why did the Torah place seemingly a random mitzvot next to each other? Or what's the significance of the smichot ha-pashiyot? Rashi himself quotes the Tanchuma, the beginning of Parashat Ki Teitze. What's the connection between Yifat Toar, Sinat Isha, Ben Bechor, and Ben Sorer Moreh? And he goes through and gives you the sequence of events. If you marry Yifat Toar, you'll end up hating her. She'll have the Ben Bechor. That Ben Bechor will go out to become a Ben Sorer Moreh. To mean that there's a cause and effect through the first three parashiyot. But you see already that the Midrash itself is trying to understand why these mitzvot have anything to do with each other. And that might be part of what the driving force is over here in Mishneh Torah, is the fact that you have disparate mitzvot that are put next to each other. The other places that you have that are in Parshat Mishpatim and in Parshat Kiddushim. And we're going to see, actually, that they're going to pop up as being these areas where we say smuchim, because these are areas where all of a sudden you have mitzvot that are put next to each other. You have to question what's the significance of them being next to each other. So when it says, "Uba'alma minalan delo dorish," how do we know that Rabbi Yehuda is not dorish smuchim every elsewhere in the Torah? The Tanya, Ben Azai Omer, Nemar. So here is in Parshat Mishpatim, Mechashefa lo techaye. A sorceress may not live, meaning that she is deserving of the death penalty, but it does not clarify for us what is the means by which we put her to death. Benemar, and right before it says, Koshochevim Beema Mot Shumat, that anybody who performs bestiality will be put to death. Samchu Inyan Bo. They are juxtaposed here, the psukim are next to each other. What's the significance? Ma Shochevim Beema Biskila. Just like we know that Shochevim Beema is Biskila, that we learn out in the Parshiot Arayot. Av Mechashefa Biskila. So too, Mechashefa is Biskila. What's the significance of putting bestiality next to sorcery? Again, it seems to be random. The answer is that there's a limud here, that the death penalty that is associated with bestiality is also the same death penalty for Mechashefa. And that's what the Torah is teaching us. Amrle Rabbi Yehuda. Mechi Bimpnesha Samchu Inyan Lo. Just because they're juxtaposed, Notzi Zele Skila, then this sorceress or sorcerer is going to be put to death with Skila. How do you can just say two things are next to each other, and now we have a death penalty that is associated with Skila. The truth is that Rabbi Kiva, others have differently limudim over there. It's not clear that Rabbi Yehuda, just because he doesn't believe in this limud, also, by definition, doesn't believe in smuchim. The Gemara seems to be learning out of the language that he used, which is, mipnei shesamchu inyan lo. Just because they're juxtaposed, does that mean the halacha is this way? Which means that he seems to be rejecting this limud, or methodology of limud. Ela ov v'idoni b'chlau mechashefim hayu. Ov and yidoni, these are all different types of, whether it's sorcery or superstitions, ways of communicating with, I'll call it the dark forces, in order to gain information. So that ability or these items are put together. The lama yatsu. And why did ov and yidoni get separated out or segregated out? Lakish lahem. To make a hekesh to them. V'lomalacha, ma yov v'idoni b'skila. Just like ov v'idoni are b'skila, af mechashefa b'skila. So too, mechashefa is b'skila. Ov v'idoni are mentioned in Parshat Kiddushim, and it says d'mehem bam over there. And we have a binyan av, that anytime it says d'mehem bam or damo bo, that means skila. And therefore, ov v'idoni, we know get skila. Then we invoke one of the 13 principles of Rabbi Shmuel, which is, kol davar she'ya b'chlal. And then it is part of a general category. And then it left that general category. Lulameid. Right? It comes to teach you something. Lo lulameid ala tzmo yatsa. The fact that it left the general principle, it doesn't come to just teach you about itself. Lulameid ala klal kulo yatsa. It's coming to teach you about everything in those items. So here you have ovi nidodi, which is part of a sequence or category of things that the Torah says you may not do. It says, tamim tia im Hashem elokecha. You have to be wholesome with God. Major machloket rishonim, what that means exactly. But let's say what the Ramban says, you have to go and seek the Navi. You want information from Hashem, go to the Navi. You don't go to these alternative methods for gaining information about the future or superstitions or ways to figure out whether you should or should not do something. Don't use these. So Ovi Yidoni is amongst all of those items. Mechashefa, Ovi Yidoni, Chover Chover, Doresh Lamitim. These are all those items that are mentioned together in this category. And then all of a sudden, Ovi Yidoni is segregated out for punishment of Dmei and Bam of Skila. So what the Gemara is saying here, that segregation of Ovi Yidoni is Skila is coming not to teach just about itself, but to teach you the whole category gets Skila. So that's the limud that Rabbi Yehuda uses to get Mechashefa Skila, not Smuchim, not the juxtaposition of Sukim. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to this position that adjacent Sukim teach you the information. Tosafot suggests, why don't we just say he has a different limud, that's why he doesn't need the smuchim over here. But the way he phrased it, it took a very negative stance against smuchim. He could just say, eino tzarech, he could have said. And then he could have brought his limud down. He says, no, mipnei shesamchu lo, just because they're juxtaposed, you're going to kill them? That table of language indicates that he doesn't subscribe to smuchim at all. Then it says, ubemishne Torah minolan. How do we know that in Dvarim he does subscribe to this? The Dorish, the Tnan. Nose Adam, Anusat Aviv. Umefutat Aviv, Anusat Beno, Umefutat Beno. Here is an out-of-wedlock relationship. A person either rapes or seduces a woman. Here it's a single woman. So assuming there's no problem of an extramarital affair because the woman was a single woman. But the problem is obviously in the activity that there was either rape or seduction over here. So this individual has no relationship or I would call it sustained relationship with this woman. It was a one-time event. The question is, does that woman then become restricted because of arayot? So since a father and a son. If a father engages in this one-time activity with a woman, does that woman now become restricted to his son? And vice versa. If the son engages in this one-time activity, again, there's no kiddushim, there is no sustained relationship between them. Is there a problem of arayot for the father vis-a-vis the son? And what we have here is that the Tanan, we have a Mishnah that says, Nosei Adam Anusat Aviv Mufudat Aviv. The one-time relationship here has no bearing in terms of arayot, and therefore the son can marry a woman that was either raped or seduced by the father, and vice versa, the father can marry a woman that was raped or seduced by the son. Rabbi Yehuda Oser ben Usat Aviv Mufudat Aviv. Rabbi Yehuda says, by the one-time affair with the father has with this woman, then restricts the woman to the son. Where does Rabbi Yehuda get this limud? So in the beginning of Perek Chav Gimel in Parshat Ki Teitzeh, it says, Lo yikach ish et eshet aviv, velo yigale kenaf aviv. Person may not take the wife of one's father, and velo yigale kenaf aviv. He may not expose the kanaf, the corner, the cloak of his father. Again, it seems to be a euphemism for the fact that you can't have arayot with a woman that is connected to the father. This pasuk is found in the middle of, we call it nowhere, but it's in between other psukim that don't necessarily have a relationship to it. The pasuk afterwards is, lo yavul psua daka krut shavcha b'kal Hashem, which is the restriction against someone who has a physical limitation in their ability to reproduce. They may not marry into Kalal Yisrael. And the psukim before deal with Kimtza ish nara betula asher lo arasau tfasa v'shechavim nimtzo. Talks about rape. So you have rape, then you have this thing about arayot of the father, and then you have lo yavo b'tzua daka. What is this doing in the middle over here? And that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. It says lo yikach ish et eshet aviv v'lo yigale knaf aviv. Knaf shira'a aviv lo yigale. So lo yikach ish et eshet aviv is clearly talking about a marriage relationship. The word kicha is a loaded term inside of kiddushim. That's how we learn out the mitzvah of kiddushin. So lo yikach sounds like you may not engage with a woman who is one's father's wife, because there the relationship is a relationship of marriage. Lo yikach eisha eishet aviv. Eisha also implies nisuin. That's a relationship of marriage. But then it says lo yigale knaf aviv. Do not expose knaf aviv. There's an absence of the word ikach, absence of the word isha. Then that implies something that has nothing to do with kiddushim, nothing to do with a relationship. So what Rabbi Yehuda suggests is knaf shira aviv lo yigale. So any woman who saw knaf aviv, again a euphemism for having a relationship with the father, but in relationships not within the context of marriage, you may not expose. How do you know that that applies also to a relationship of rape? Maybe that only applies to a consensual relationship of some sort. How do you know it applies to rape? Milavei dekra. Because right above this pasuk, tichtiv, it says, the pasuk before says, v'natana isha shuchev imadla v'yanera chamshim kasev, which is the punishment for anusa. So the punishment for anusa, or the parsha of anusa, is stated right before this. So Rabbi Yehuda says, the juxtaposition of these two parshiot tells you that in the face of anusat aviv, lo yigale knaf aviv. One may not then engage in a relationship with this woman if the woman already had a prior relationship with the father, even though it was not a relationship within the context of marriage. But you see here, Rabbi Yehuda is being doresh smuchim. So the fact that it says, Natana isha shuchev imad l'aviyah nerach hamshim kasef is samich lei, again, smuchim. Adjacent to that, the next pasuk, the subsequent pasuk is, lo yikach ish et eshet aviv, lo yigale kenaf aviv. So therefore, we learn this out. So the Gemara says, Rabbanon, why don't the Rabbanon agree with Rabbi Yehuda here? Because, I have a samich lei kedamart. We would agree. If they were actually adjacent to each other, we would agree with your position. Hasha de lo samichle, here they are not juxtaposed. Because if you really look at it carefully, you have the Parsha of Anusa, then you have lo yikach ish et eshet aviv, which is the beginning of the Pasuk, that is talking about a relationship through marriage. Then it says lo yagalea kanaf aviv, which is the latter half of the Pasuk. So lo yagalea kanaf aviv and the rape scenario are separated by the phrase lo yikach ish et eshet aviv. So that separation already makes them no longer juxtaposed in the psukim because you have something that interrupts. There's another halacha that interrupts over here. So they say, the pasuk is talking about Yibum. That in the face of Yibum, if there's a relationship to the father, one may not perform Yibum. So the Mara says, Valavora la bishnei lavim. Comes to add on an additional lav, an additional restriction over here. Now what, the additional restriction over here is that this is someone who is waiting to perform Yibum with the father. It was the person's uncle passed away. The person's uncle passed away without any children. His father is now obligated in Yibum to this woman. The woman is with the restriction of lo yeh ish achutza l'ish zar. The woman may not go and marry someone else until either chalitza or Yibum has been performed. If the father performs Yibum with Chalitza, then we're talking about. If he performs Yibum, then she becomes Eshet Aviv, so she's clearly restricted. If he performs Chalitza, then we'll deal with this later in the Masechta, then it's Chalutzat Aviv, whether that has any ramifications, but then she's free. But if in the waiting period, where she's waiting and there's no decision been made whether there's going to be Yibum with Chalitza, there's already a lav that she can't go marry a third party. Here we add on an additional lav, which is Lo Yigalek Naf Aviv. Someone who is re'uyah to be in the cloak of the father, not married yet, but re'uyah to be in the cloak of the father, she is restricted. So that's the case here. That's a shomer, waiting, a yivama that is waiting to marry the father, the son who has a relationship that was now in violation of two lavin. The lav of the woman being able to marry a third party, as well as this lav, which is because it has an additional relationship here, which is it happens to be the woman's waiting for his father. So there's now a second Isur over here. Gemara says, Mishneh Torah, my time at the Dorish. Why is it in Mishneh Torah that he is Doresh? Which is basically David's question. And the whole Torah is not willing to do Smuchim. And Varim, not only do Smuchim, but is a Smuchim that not exactly Smuchim. And why is, what in Mishneh Torah is driving him to do this? So Gemara says, Ibayitem Mishum Demuchach, Ibayitem Mishum Demufne. Either because it's demanded, or because it's extraneous. One of these two reasons. It's obvious that there's something going on here. This is what I mentioned before. The fact that you have, I would call them, random mitzvot placed next to each other, that's already a giveaway that there's something going on over here. And that's over here. This is a pasuk that has nothing to do in context here with erva. We talked about, you talk about rape, you talk about seduction. But those aren't situations of arayot, direct arayot. Those parshiot are found in Akremot and Kedoshim. What is it doing in the middle of parshiot Ki Teitzei? The fact that it's there already indicates there must be something significant to its placement here in parshiot Ki Teitzei rather than in Akremot and Kedoshim. So that's exactly what we were saying before. Gotcha. The fact that it's out of place already indicates there must be some value to the placement over here. Some say it's because it's extraneous. Dimken lechtov rachmana, lo yikach et eshet aviv. It should have simply just said, lo yikach et eshet aviv. Lo yigle kanaf aviv, lomali. What do you need lo yigle kanaf aviv for? Shma mina. From that we learn out, lafnuye, that it's extraneous. That extraneous pasuk teaches you that you darshan smuchim over here. Now the truth is it's not so extraneous. The chachamim just told you what it was there for. But what's interesting is here, the Gemara says, wait, lo yigle kanaf aviv is extraneous. It's not extraneous. The Chachamim Darshan for Lo Yikalei Kanaf Aviv, that has to do with Shomeret Yabam. And so they have a limud for it. Therefore, Tosafot says here there was another girsa in the Gemara. And the other girsa in the Gemara was, Lo Yikach Et Eshet Aviv, Aviv Lomali. Which is, the necessity to repeat the word Aviv in the second half of the Pasuk, that is what is extraneous. The context has already been defined. Lo Yikach Et Eshet Aviv. Velo Yigle Et Knafo, you could have said. Because you know the references to Aviv already. The addition of Aviv again is what is extraneous over here. That's how Tosafot learns it and says you can learn out what the Chachamim are saying. But the problem is the word Aviv. The word Aviv here is unnecessary. And that's what drives the Smuchim over here. Other possibility is the Rivan says over here that the Gemara is not really asking about the second half of the Pasuk. But it's saying here that the Rivan perish to Shapir Garis lo yigaleh below Vav. Vakulei kray kabayi. Lamalei demishman le deshas lo mukhed la bishomed yabam shel aviv came into love hachi itka isur yivamala shuk. He says, what's the question? You just asked me, oh, why is the second half extraneous? Because the rabbanan are doresh that a shomer yabam, there's another lav from that. So you're saying it's not extraneous. He says, wait a minute. It really is extraneous because you already have a restriction. A woman who's waiting for the performance of Yibum already has a lav from the parsha of Yibum to go marry a third party. So she has that lav. You're going to tell me I have a drush to give a second lav? That's not our first choice. That's a choice when we have no other options. For drusha, we say, okay. If we have no other options, we say, oh, it comes to add on a second lav or a third lav. Okay, that's fine if you have nothing else to do with it. But if you have something else to do with it, then we'd always opt for the drusha over adding on an extra lav. And so he says, that's exactly what the Gemara is saying over here. Lo yigaleh kanaf aviv is extraneous. If I can make a drusha smuchim, I'd much rather that than add on a lav that already exists and make a second lav, a third lav that this woman is waiting for Yibum as extra lavim associated with her. So that's how the Rivan learns it. But either way, the Gemara concludes that this is extraneous. Tosafot does ask David's question, what is driving you inside of Devarim to do this? Maybe that same reason exists in other places in the Torah. And Tosafot speculates that that might be the case. That if you had places where, like for instance, Micha Shefa Lo Techayeh, if it was Muchach over there, that either it didn't belong, or that there was Afnuye Mufne, it was available for Gzeir Shava, that even Rabbi Yehuda would agree. Happens to be that the majority of the cases are in Mishneh Torah, so the Gemara just says that Rabbi Yehuda in Mishneh Torah says Smuchin. But that doesn't limit him to Mishneh Torah. He might say in other places, we just don't have any obvious manifestations of that. Maybe there's one or two, but in Mishneh Torah there are tons of these cases, and therefore the Gemara just says about Mishneh Torah. Tosafot entertains the possibility that it's not limited to Mishneh Torah, it's limited to cases where it's either Mukhacha or Mufne. Right, so now the Gemara continues and says, V'gabi tzitzit nami. So by tzitzit, why are you doresh smuchim? If you're saying now that Rabbi Yehuda is doresh smuchim Mishneh Torah, you have the parsha of tzitzit right next to the parsha of kilayim. So then why is there either mukhacha milta or afnuye mufne? So Gemara says, ibaitem mishum de mukhach, ibaitem mishum de mufne. Ibaitem mishum de mukhach, dem tken lichtavei, rachmana gavi parsha tzitzit. Parsha tzitzit is found in parsha shlach. So that should be found over there in parsha shlach. What's it doing over here in the middle of parsha ki tetzei? So why is it written over here in the middle of Parshat Tzitzit? To teach you the din of smuchin, of smuchin of kilayim to tzitzit. It's written, ubeged kilayim shatneis lo yale alecha. The ikar isur of kilayim is found in Parshat Kiddushim. Over there it says, ubeged kilayim shatneis lo yale alecha. Lo tubash shatneis lamali. Why do I need another isur here in Sefer Devarim that's telling me the same thing? It says there, don't wear shatneis, and it says over here, don't wear shatneis. Rami no, lafnuye. It must be extraneous to teach you the din of kilayim bitzitzit. The Gemara says, wait a minute. Hani mitzrek tzrike. And I just like David said, what do you mean? It's not so simple here. Both psukim teach you different pieces of information. The pasuk that is found in Kiddushim, in Sefer Vayikra, says, lo yale alecha. Ale alecha does not mean to wear. It means even anything that's on you, anything, you wrap a blanket around you. That would be a problem of kilayim. Havimina kol derech hala'a asar rachmana. Any type of form of touching your body or being around you would be restricted. Vafilei mochrek suit. Even people are selling garments. This is a classic example of davar sheino mitkavein, a case where kilayim is allowed. For instance, they have bigadim that are kilayim, and they want to sell them. So in order to show them to the customers, they used to hold them, they used to put them on, or show them, or put them, roll them over their shoulders to show them. They're not intending to wear it. They're just trying to show the customers, obviously non-Jewish customers who are buying this kilayim, what they have for sale, what it looks like. So they're allowed to do that, because they're not wearing it. They're simply doing it to show it off, to not to wear it, not to get benefit from it. They don't want hana, they're not benefiting from the warmth, their protection of this beged. They're simply putting it on to show off. Might be too, l'avriach at the misim. You only have to pay taxes if you're selling the garment and it's not wearing it, right? But if you're wearing it, then there's no customs on the garment. So if you're just putting it on to get out of paying the taxes, so too over there. You're not wearing it for clothing. You're wearing it to get out of the taxes. So in those cases, you would have thought that it's still restricted because it says, lo yale alecha. If it goes on you at all, it's problematic. Kotav Rachmana here in Parshat Ki today, lo til bash shatneis, levisha, domia de levisha, de ipehana. Only where it's wearing. Wearing means you get benefit from the beged. Whether it's a benefit of tzniut, whether it's a benefit of warmth, There's a benefit that has to come about. It's not simply it's on you. It has to be something where, like when you wear clothing, you get a certain amount of benefit. So, had the Torah just written lo tubash, I mean, a dafka levisha, then a fish hanyata. That only wearing it is problematic. But just putting it on is not restricted at all. And that's not the truth. The truth is that if you put it on and get hana from it, it is restricted. Over there, the case of putting it on, he's not getting any hana. But if you were to stay on the couch, sit on a blanket of kilayim, or wrap a blanket of kilayim around you on the couch, and you will get warmth from it, it would be problematic in that case. So you need both psukim. It's not extraneous. You need both of them. So both psukim are teaching you information. Now I'm missing this point that it's extraneous. Can't put it on when he does something similar to hana'ah of wearing it. Has to be not exactly wearing it, but similar to wearing it. So how's that? It's a case where I get benefit from putting it on me. If I put a blanket on me, I'm not wearing the blanket, but I'm getting warmth from the blanket, so that's hana'ah. That would be restricted. The mochlek sut are getting neither of those. They're not wearing it, and they're not getting hana'ah from it. So where it says, imkein rechtov rachmana lo tu bash satnez. The Torah here in Parashat Ki Tzeh should have just said, don't wear satnez. Tzemru pishtim lomali. Why do you need the tzemru pishtim? Michtek. Tiv, ubegid kilayim shatnez lo yale alecha. We already have the pasuk in Vayikra that says, begid kilayim shatnez lo yale alecha. Vitana debay Rabbi Shmuel. And we have a limud from the Tana debay Rabbi Shmuel. Ho, venemru batoras stam bigadim. Throughout the Torah we have the word begid that appears, and we don't know what the definition of begid is. Uprat lecha katu bechad mehem. In one of those instances, the Torah enumerated what the begid is, which is semer upishtin. It's talking about wool and linen. Af kol semer upishtin. It basically creates a binyan af. It establishes that the word beged in the Torah always references semer upishtin. This is found by the Pasha of Tzarat. When it talks about bigadim, clothing that can get Tzarat, over there it says beged semer, beged pishtin. So the fact that it says beged semer, it defines for you what a beged is. A beged is made out of wool, or a beged is made out of linen. That's what a beged is made out of. So when you say shatnez, beged shatnez, which means a beged of a mixture, well, there are only two types of begadim in the Torah. There's wool and there's linen. If you're talking about a mixture, you're talking about a mixture between wool and linen. So the fact that the pasuk in Parashat Kiddushim uses the word beged and shatnez together, it tells you what shatnez is. Shatnez means semer pishtin. So when I reuse the word here in Sefer Devarim, I say shatnez, I know what you're talking about. I know you're talking about wool and linen. Why does the pasuk then continue and say semer pishtin yachdav? Why does it add on the word semer pishtin? That's already obvious from the pasuk. Semer pishtin dechtiv rachmano lamali shmamina leafnuye. That tells you that it is extraneous, and since it's extraneous, we're doresh smuchim between kilayim and tzitzit over there. Where it says, wait a minute, akati yitzriach, we still need it. Sakadat chamina halaahi delo nafish hanata. That only by something where halaah is what's mentioned, lo yaleh alecha in birika, over there I would have said, since that is a more minor interaction with the garment, then over there, semer upishtin are the only things that are restricted. Avalavisha, the nofish hanyate, wearing something which is a much more intimate interaction with the beged, kol trei minei asa rachmana. Maybe there are any two types of mixture would be restricted. Any two types of material would be problematic. So where it says, wait a minute, it's not so clear here that semer upishtin don't need to be written over here. You might have thought that the reason for tzemer pishtin is because lo yale alecha, which means when you have a little more removed interaction with this, you have a blanket that you put on you, there tzemer pishtin are the only problem. But if you put on a shirt, you put on pants, you put on a jacket, you're wearing it, then maybe any two materials would be problematic. And that's why we need to tell us tzemer pishtin is applies by both. That's why, katav rachmana tzemer pishtin. Mar says, imkein l'shtok ramine. The apostle should have been just silent. V'teite, shatnez, mehala'a. That you wouldn't have thought, because the word shatnez appears in both places. It appears in Sefer Vayikra, in Parashat Kedoshim. It also appears here in Parashat Ki Tzeh. And the word shatnez is already defined. So if I have the word shatnez appearing here, and I have the word shatnez already appearing in Vayikra, and Vayikra, I already know it's semer pishtin, because the word beged is used over there, and we know that the word beged is defined as being semer pishtin, then if the shatnez in Vayikra means semer pishtin, then the shatnez in Ki Tzeh also means semer upishtin. So again, why do I need the word semer upishtin? That must be that it's extraneous, and since it's extraneous, it teaches me that I can learn out smuchim over here. Now, the Gemara says, V'tana debi Rabbi Shmuel, Taima dichtiv rachmana semer upishtin. It's only because the Torah wrote semer upishtin, halavachi kilayim bitzitzit, hava mina dasa rachmana. Without that extraneous semer upishtin, I would have thought kilayim b'tzitzit are not allowed. Dichtiv, because it says in the pasuk, v'asu lehem tzitzit al kanfei bigdehem. You must make the tzitzit on the corners of your bigadim. V'tana de Rebbe Shmuel, kol bigadim tzemru pishtim heim. The same time the Rebbe Shmuel. Anytime the word beged is used, it means wool and linen. So here it says al kanfei bigdehem. Bigdehem in kol means beged. Beged in the Torah means wool and linen. And it says v'amar rachmanan aved lei techelet. And it says over there, put a string of techelet on. Utchelet amrahu. Techelet is wool. So if you have to put a wool string on, and your choices are, you have a begadim here, one beged could be made of tzemer, one beged made of pishtan, that means on a beged of pishtan, you're going to be putting on a string of techelet, which is wool. So now you're creating tzitzit with kilayim in it by definition. In order to put tzitzit on a linen beged, you must engage in kilayim. So why do I need a juxtaposition or extraneous words here to teach me that kilayim is mutar? Kilayim is mutar from the Iker Mitzvah. The Torah says, according to the Rebbe Tanya and Rebbe Shmuel, there are only two types of begadim that you can have here, and it says it in plural, so you don't even have a choice. It says big dehem. Big dehem in plural means that you're talking about two types of begad. Well, according to Rebbe Tanya and Rebbe Shmuel, there are only two types of begadim in the Torah. That is samer and pishtim. So I'm talking about either wool and linen begad, and the Torah says, put in a petil techelet. Put in a wool string of techelet into those begadim. Very good question. So Gemara says, "Umimai the techelet damro." How do you know that techelet is made out of wool? So Gemara says, "Midesheish kitana." Since sheish is linen, techelet amro. Then for sure techelet is amro. It's not so complex, but the big day kahuna are made out of different materials. The big day kahuna we said are made out of sheish, and we know from in Sefer Yechezkel it says that it's bad. Bad and sheish are the same thing. That we learn out because the basha that grows bad b'bad. Gemara has a drasha. How do you know bad is sheish is linen? So we know already that the sheish for sure is linen. The question is, what are the other materials over there? You have tchelet, argaman, tulat shani. You have other materials that are all colored over there. What are those two materials made out of? So the fact that in Yechezkel it tells you that the bigadim or the white bigadim are only made out of linen, it implies that the rest of the year or the kohen gadol's bigadim outside of the kodesh hakodeshim include wool in them. They have a mixture of wool and linen. Well, if sheish is the linen, then the other items must be wool. Now, the truth is, you could have argued that tchelet is also linen, and that tolat shani and argaman are wool. You could have argued that, but as Tosafot says, it doesn't make so much sense. You have one thing that's sheish, which is made out of linen, which is all white, and then you have three items that are colored. We have tchelet, three colors. You have tchelet, argaman, and tolat shani. It only makes sense to say those three colored items come from the same material, they're just a different dye on the material, and that's what the Gemara concludes over here. If sheish is kitana, which is linen, then tchelet, argaman, and tulat shani are made out of wool. So that's how we know that tchelet in the Torah means wool dyed with tchelet. All right, now, Gemara says, wait a minute, it's drich, because sakadat chokid rova. You might have thought like rova. So what the Gemara is asking over here is, why do you need Semru Pishtin in Sefer Devarim, in Parsha Kitetzeh, to teach you that kilayim is overridden by tzitzit? It's obvious out of the Parsha and Parsha Shlach. In Parsha Shlach, the definition of tzitzit, at least according to Tanya Rishmo, is that you have a beged of semru pishtim, and you have a tchelet string that's going in there. So by definition, you have to have kilayim. So why do I have to be matir kilayim here in Devarim if the Parsha and Shlach automatically is matir kilayim? So Gemara says, salkadat chokke rava. We would have thought like rava. The truth is, they're not saying like rava, they're saying like the drusha of rava. Because we're going to see in the end, rava and Tanya Rishmo agree. But it's just saying that I would have thought like rava. What does rava say? The Rava Ramiktiv. Rava says we have a stira in the psukim. It says haknaf. That the Parsha Shlach, it says that you have to make the tzitzit, it says haknaf, til techelet. It says haknaf, min knaf. He dashes of the word haknaf from the corner that the tzitzit have to be similar to the material that's on the corner. So the material on the corner is the material of the beged, and the tzitzit have to be similar to the material that is the beged. Uchtiv tzemer upishtim. And it says by, here we say the word semer pishtim, which indicates that tzitzit are made out of semer or pishtim. Ha ketzad. How does that work? Semer pishtim potrim ben b'minan ben shlo b'minan. Semer pishtim can be used as tzitzit, and they work no matter what. Semer pishtim can be tzitzit on a cotton beged, they can be tzitzit on a silk beged, they can be tzitzit on a semer beged, on a wool beged, or a linen beged. On the other hand, sharminim, if you make your tzitzit out of cotton, then b'minan potrim, they only work on a cotton beged. Shelo b'minan ein potrim, but they don't work on any other beged. So if you wear any other material besides semru pishtim, You can use that material for the tzitzit, or you can use semer upishtim as the tzitzit. That's the practice today. Even people have cotton tzitzit, they wear woolen tzitzit on the cotton, because wool works no matter what. Technically, you could have cotton tzitzit on the cotton baguette. It would be very thin, the strings would be much harder to work with, in terms of they probably rip much easier, but the truth is you could do this. So Rava says, I have two limudim. I have mina knaf, that the material of the beged of the corner is the same as the tzitzit. That's only when they match. If they match up, that works. Says semer pishtim works for tzitzit. That is, no matter what. Semer pishtim work anywhere. That's the end of Rava's limit. Vaha, Tana debay Rabbi Shmuel, late to Rava. Wait a minute. Tana debay Rabbi Shmuel doesn't agree with Rava. So what's going on over here? Tana debay Shmuel says there's only one type of beged that you can have in there. Semer pishtim. You can only have wool and linen begets. They don't need knaf mina knaf because they don't have silk. They don't have cotton begadim. They think tzitzit must be wool or linen. You have no choice. The beget has got to be one of those two to be chayav and tzitzit. To them, cotton is not chayav and tzitzit. So Ezra says, no. They would have thought, itzrich, sachadachak diyuka de Rava. They would have thought like the limud of Rava, not like Rava's din in the end, because they don't believe that a beget besides seven pishtim is chayav and tzitzit. So what is it, diyuka Rava? Ha knaf min knaf. Vachi kamar rachmana. This is what the Torah says. Avid leitzemer leitzemer, upishtin lepishtin. I would have learned out from mina knaf that you only have to match it up. The Torah says tzemer upishtin, and also says you have tzitzit that are made out of tzemer pishtin. So I would say, put tzemer tzitzit on a tzemer beged, and put linen tzitzit on a linen beged. V'chi avadit tzemer, and when you put on woolen tzitzit, letzemer tzave. You should dye that tzchelet. So what I would have thought is, yes, tzchelet is wool. But where do I put the woolen tzitzit? On a woolen beged, because it says mina knaf. You have to have the tzitzit be the same as the beged. So when I put on woolen tzitzit, I'll put on tchelet. When I put on linen tzitzit on the linen beged, I don't put on the tchelet. And that's what I would have thought. That would have been my hava mina. Along comes about semer pishtin, or pishtin letzemer, to mix and match, to say I can put wool on a linen beged, or linen on a woolen beged, I would have thought no. So that's it. Katov rachmano semer pishtin. That's what the extra puzzle comes. From Shlach, you're right. I would have known or thought that I knew Kilayim, but that's not necessarily true. I would have thought from Parshat Shlach, all I know is that Semer Pishtim are the only Begadim. Semer Pishtim are the Tzitzit. But match it up. You put the woolen Tzitzit on the woolen Begadim, and you put the linen Tzitzit on the linen Begadim. Oh, what about Tchelet? You're right. Tchelet will only be on woolen Begadim. It won't be on the linen Begadim. So then, along comes Semer Pishtim in Parshat, in Sefer Devarim, in Parshat Ketitei, and tells you, Afilu tzemer lepishtin upishtin letzemer. It comes to tell you, you can have kilayim even when it's tzemer upishtin. You can put a tzemer woolen tzitzit on a linen beged, and you can put linen tzitzit on a woolen beged. And that's why you need tzemer upishtin over here to teach you that kilayim is mutar betzitzit. Since tzemer upishtin is extraneous, and we learn out smuchim, that smuchim teaches us that kilayim is mutar betzitzit. And why do I need to know that kilayim is mutar betzitzit? Because I would have had a hava mina that it's not the case. Even if I limit you to tzemer pishtim as the beged, I would have thought that it means match up the tzemer and tzemer match up the pishtim and pishtim, like Rava says, min kanah. Along comes the tzemer pishtim teaches us, no, you can have a mismatch. You can have wool on linen and linen on woolen tzitzit. You can have kilayim straight across. And for that case, you have tchelet. The answer is that in the end, if you want to do tzitzit on a linen beged, you would have to have kilayim. You would have to have a woolen tzitzit in there to put in tchelet. The Gemara actually says in other places that if you're not going to put in tchelet, then we tell you don't put in wool and tzitzit. There's no reason to put in kilayim into a linen beged unnecessarily. It's just migo that you can put in the tchelet, and you have to put in the tchelet and make a kilayim, then you can make the white kilayim as well. But if you're not going to put in a tchelet string, then don't put in kilayim. There's no reason to put in kilayim over there. There's no necessity for it, and therefore we don't suggest it or we don't do it in that case. But if it's not b'makom tchelet, then we don't do it. But that's what we learn out. So again, just to summarize over here, we started out down this road because we had the idea of asei docha lo tasei. Where do we know that asei is docha lo tasei? The Gemara learned that out of the juxtaposition between kilayim and tzitzit. That shows that tzitzit overrides the lo tasei of kilayim. Then the Gemara got sidetracked into smuchim. Our smuchim drashot. So the Gemara says here, we have other drashot of smuchim. And then even according to Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't doresh smuchim in other parts of the Torah. Nevertheless, in Mishneh Torah, in Devarim, he does darshan smuchim. Then we say, why in Devarim is he darshan smuchim? He says, either because it's obvious from the fact that it's out of place over here, it's put here, and there's another parsha that it should have been in, that shows you that there should be doresh smuchim, or it's extraneous. So then we came back to tzitzit and kilayim and said, what's extraneous in the pasuk of tzitzit? Why is it extraneous? Well, we have a pasuk in Vayikra that already teaches us about shatneis. Why is it over here that it's extraneous? So I said, you're right in the end. We have different limudim from both of them. In the end game, we came up with semru pishtim was the extraneous words over here. And those extraneous words teach us that semru pishtim can be placed in tzitzit, even in the face of kilayim. And that's the limud that we get here because it's extraneous. Why is it extraneous? Because we would have known from the word shatneis already that it's semru pishtim because Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, at least according to Tana Debei Yisrael, begging in the Torah always means semru pishtim. And in Parshat Kedoshim and Sefer Vayikra, the word beged is used by shatneis. So therefore it means it must be Tzemer Pishtin. If it says shatneis here in Devarim, it must be beged Tzemer Pishtin. Why mention Tzemer Pishtin again? To teach you this limud. Won't we have known that already from the Parshat Tzitzit and Shlach? The answer is no. We would have thought you'd have to keep Tzemer by Tzemer, Pishtin by Pishtin. And now this comes to teach you can mix them up and put Kilayim on. That's what we learned today. Obviously the Gemara's next question is, Tinach L'Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. That works according to the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, who says that the word beged is defined as semru pishtin. Without that, if the word beged means any material, then semru pishtin is not extraneous in Sefer Devarim. Because how do you know that kilayim is semru pishtin? How do I know it? Because it says it in the pasuk in Devarim. That means it's no longer extraneous. So the Gemara will have to go on and deal with people who do not hold like Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. How do they have an extraneous word over here to teach us that we have smuchim between kilayim and tzitzit? Okay, we're stopping here at the bottom of Dalet Amud Bet.